but too warm. Now, however, tonight we can expect rain and snow likely, and then there's another chance of rain or snow. Starts out about 70%. Probably in most areas not going to be snow because it's going to get down to about 33 degrees. So it really could be a mess if it does freeze in some areas, especially on some of the roads. But tomorrow, nice, becoming sunny, high of about 46 degrees, clear tomorrow night, and sunny Sunday. Beautiful day, high of about 58 degrees, and by Monday, mostly sunny, and it could get into the mid-60s. So this is, unfortunately, it's too warm. We haven't had a winter. We haven't had that deep freeze. Flowers are coming up. People with allergies are starting to have allergies this early. But baseball's underway, and, you know, in Florida, and draft is going to be shortly. I watched a little bit of the combine. I don't know if you did. But, frankly, I'm going to turn it over to you and tell me and tell us what's happening in sports.
Thanks, Pat. Good afternoon, everybody. Folks, you know I'm a big hockey fan, and one of the things I really enjoy about hockey is when my hockey team, the Philadelphia Flyers, are in first place. Right now they're tied with the Washington Capitals, 87 points each, after beating the Capitals earlier this week, 5-2. Great performance by their allegedly backup goalie, Brian Elliott. And last night they managed to beat the Carolina Hurricanes 4-1. Again, good play. This time by their young goalie, Hart. And the really cool thing is you take a look at Hart when he takes his mask off, you think his mom has to pick him up and drop him off after the games, for the games. So I'm happy about that. The other thing I really like about hockey are what I call hockey goon stories. Now, you may remember the notorious Matthew Barnaby of Buffalo Sabres and New York Rangers fame. There was a Ranger game many, many years ago where they were playing the Devils, and Barnaby, being a forward and being a major nuisance, decides that he's going to do jumping jacks in front of New Jersey Devils goalie Martin Brodeur so that he could block his vision and hopefully one of the Rangers would score. Well, he was doing jumping jacks until he got leveled by one of the Devil defensemen. I think it may have been, it'll come to me in a minute. I must be having a senior moment. But on Thursday night, to continue the hockey goon saga, he got busted for assault and public intoxication at a bar down in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, according to the Nashville cops.
What night was that?
Thursday night or early Thursday morning. So
okay, so I guess a couple days after the tornado.
You bet. He decided he'd be his own tornado, okay. Fueled by everybody's favorite substance of abuse, alcohol. Nashville Metro Police were dispatched to the Nashville Crossroads Bar. Sounds like quite a place. In response to a report of an intoxicated male who was allegedly involved in an altercation with his girlfriend and bystanders.
Uh-oh.
Barnaby, now age 46, was also accused of choking a bouncer at the scene. Barnaby, who played for the Rangers from 2001 to 2004, was released on $6,000 bail and is scheduled to appear in court on March 27.
No, wait a minute, Bill.
Wait a minute. I'm not done. Barnaby tweeted Thursday afternoon he would put out a full statement soon, writing, "At this time, all I can say is I believe the incident in question will be over and I will be vindicated very soon. Support has been overwhelming. Thank you."
But wait a minute. The reason I'm asking, and I started to cut you off, is why is this even news? The guy hasn't played since, what, 2004?
Well, no, he's played since 2004.
What was his last time he played?
He actually played with Tennessee, with the Nashville Predators for a while. But Barnaby, who was an enforcer, is kind of an unusual person. Usually when hockey players retire, they go off and they do something rather sedate, like shake hands, sell insurance, do something. Barnaby doesn't seem to have picked things up, and I'm guessing that there's something else going on there. He's always been a little bit of a wild man, but he's really got some problems.
And how old is he now?
He's 46. He's got an ex-wife with a restraining order against him. He got sentenced to 500 hours of community service and anger management courses previously. And he worked for an enforcer. He worked for the ESPN network before they cut their ties with him after he got busted for a drunk driving. He pled guilty and had to do 100 hours of community service, lost his license, had some other problems. So this is somebody who made a career in hockey out of trying to be colorful, and because he didn't really have the same kind of skill set, he decided he would basically just be a major pain in the neck. Now, it's interesting because we see other guys who are tough guys like Ty Domi or Daryl Sutter go on and have very different careers, either as coaches or doing something else in the community. It's very positive. But every now and then you get somebody who you didn't like when he was a player. And now you see in his later life, in middle age, he's still acting like a 15-year-old.
Well, let me ask you, do you know what the average length of time hockey players play in the professionals?
Yeah. If it's in the NHL, the average career is about 8 years.
Oh, that's fairly long. That's
it is.
Longer than NFL.
Well, remember, there's 33 teams. Although they don't have 53 guys on a team, they usually dress 18 and they skate in practice about 25. Plus, it's easier to move guys up and down between the NHL and the AHL or the ECHL.
Yeah, but look at the number of games they play every
year. They play
year.
81. 81 games.
They play so many more games.
And then you got the playoffs.
They have so many more games, playoffs, and, lots of injuries. So it is surprising that that average is so much higher than NFL. Mm-hmm.
And getting back to Barnaby, I'm wondering if he had some kind of a head injury that may have affected him neurologically, because this is very odd behavior for somebody in their 40s.
Well, yes and no. If he had a previous DUI, if there was a previous restraining order, it sounds to me as if this is just kind of more of the same. And obviously, interesting, was he going to be driving home from this bar? And, whatever. It's a shame. It's a shame when anybody, but especially these former professional athletes who everybody looked up to.
Oh, sure.
And, whether he was the best or not the best, I think it's very hard for many of them to end their careers.
Well, remember something. He's probably a Canadian, I don't know, but you spend your life on the ice, and that's pretty much absorbing just about every waking moment, and then suddenly it's over, and suddenly you have to make all those changes, and that's not easy unless you go into coaching or you've planned for it.
Well, and I don't think, I would be very surprised. There are very few professional athletes who just decide to retire while they're still in their prime.
Oh, yeah.
So many of them, and they're facing lots of problems. I mean, in fact, I've been reading some interesting articles on, we always hear about NFL and the worries about concussions.
Exactly, and that's what I think about Barnaby.
Well, but you know what another huge problem is after football?
I have no idea.
Obesity.
Really?
Because a lot of these guys are told to bulk up, and they do. But remember, they also are, have all of these training. They have everybody in the world helping them with the training. They have reasons to stay in shape, whether they're bigger or not. Many of the players today are so much bigger, heavier than they were. Taller, heavier than they were. I mean, remember when Refrigerator Perry?
Oh.
He was...
Very well.
He was just... But it was so strange.
He was 360 pounds, wasn't he?
360. He was huge. But the point is, he was the only one. And now different players, not only are there different players, I think there are different positions that we didn't expect players to be that big they are. But the obesity problem, remember, a lot of these guys have problems with their shoulders, their knees, their legs. So they're not able to exercise the way they did. And, you know, they're used to eating huge amounts of food, so that there are many players out there that easily gain another 100 pounds after their playing days are done. So interesting article about how some of these guys are trying to get together and exercise together and, you know, trying to understand that, you know, obesity and diabetes and, you know, is really going to shorten their life.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. I had the pleasure of actually knowing former Boston Bruin, Derek Sanderson, when he played for the Philadelphia Blazers in the 70s. And Sanderson went on to become a play-by-play announcer and general sort of helper-outer for the Bruins after his career.
Well, but then was he on television? I mean, did anybody see him? Most of these guys, you know, they are not in the spotlight. There's no real reason other than health to, you know, watch their weight, and it just goes out of control.
Well,
and
he managed to begin to take care of himself when he got after his playing days, and he got into his 40s. But he had knees that were extremely painful for him to move around on because he took so many blows to the legs while he was on the ice. He may have had, like a lot of people do, drug or alcohol problems. I really don't know. But he managed to build himself back into a sportscasting career, and he was one of these color guys rather than a play-by-play guy. And he was also became something of an ambassador for the Bruins up in Boston. I always liked him. I always thought he was an interesting, colorful, smart guy, very good hockey player. He was a forward. And I remember him playing when the Flyers won their first championship against the Bruins. He was on the other side. And when the Blazers were formed for the World Hockey Association, I think a lot of the reasons why he was offered a contract was because he had played so well in that Stanley Cup final. So, you know, an interesting thing. It's tough for people to make transitions in just about any profession or occupation. There's time, and it's very odd. You know, as professionals, as lawyers, we think we're going to retire perhaps in our 60s or 70s or then some.
Athletes.
But now these guys are in their 30s or 40s.
30s. Yeah, most of them.
Now they have to do something else.
Most of them are, you know, many of them come out of college early.
Yeah.
They may go 3 years and then they're out. So what? They're maybe 20, 21. And, you know, if they have 10 years, they're going to be in, you know, and most of them don't play for 10 years. So if they make a team and even play 4 or 5 years, that's considered pretty average. And
That's a pretty good career if you're in the
big
leagues for 5 years.
And so you're still going to be in your 20s.
Right. I mean, you could be 31 and done, and you've made all this money. And that's probably all the money. That's about as much money as you're ever going to make. And when you get used to that,
and
it's very difficult to make a change.
I mean, to our standards, yes, they make a lot of money. But some of them, you know, they never make, you know, the huge salaries.
That's true. That's true. Professional athletes, you have to be very lucky, and you have to be very, very good, and you have to get the right coaching, and you have to be in the right place at the right time.
And they need to make the right investments with their money when they're getting it. And, you also have to realize so many of these guys, you know, might come to one team, buy a house, and then they're traded. And, you know, can they sell that house quickly? Not. You know, it can be a very nomadic career.
Oh, it can be. And you also have the problem of, you know, people who are good, but they're not major league caliber. And they're up and down. There are AAA guys who sometimes end up in the big club, or they get called to spring training, and then they get cut, or they get assigned to one of the minor league teams, say in baseball or in any of the other sports. The other problem you have is in college, particularly with basketball. You get some very talented people who play in the NBA for a couple of years, and they make a lot of money, and then for whatever reason, you don't hear about them again.
Well, and how many, when you're talking about sports, you know, I had not thought about this, but there must be fewer basketball players that make it to the professionals.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have, you know, the big rosters. They don't even have...
They have, 12, 15 guys on a team?
Yeah, and they don't have the number of... Well, there's a number of teams, but they don't have, you know, there's not 52 players on a basketball team.
Certainly not.
And even hockey, is there a number in hockey? I
don't know. Generally, you can have 24 guys, but you can only dress 18 guys per game.
Well, but still, 24 is
and you're scratching.
A lot fewer
yeah.
than football.
Well, that's right. Football is 53, but remember, right. hockey, you're only skating six guys. In football, you've at least got to have 11
well,
on the field.
But the point is, there are not that many guys who are going to make it to professional basketball or
right.
professional hockey because they have. It's not how often they skate, it's how many are on the team. And
that's right.
24 and only suiting 18. You know, there's a lot of kids out there who are aspiring to those.
So those 18 positions, or those 24 positions, sure.
Positions.
But remember, at the end of the day, you know, we can call it a kid's game because as young people, we all played it and loved it and kept our love of a sport going. But you also have the problem of not. Only a very few of us are going to be touched by that magic wand and be talented enough and motivated enough to really devote their lives to a sport. And even then, you have to hope you get the right coaching and you're in the right position to succeed.
Absolutely, you need the right coaching. And today, I think hockey is always interesting to me because growing up in the Midwest, you know, we skated on ponds.
So did we here in Flemington.
And so there were no, I mean, in Milwaukee there probably was, in the Midwest, and I grew up
Oh, they had the old Admirals up there.
But they, yeah, but the kids didn't have indoor skating, so.
That's right.
And anybody who played hockey only played in the winter, you know, and skated on ponds and usually had to put up with all the kids, the other kids who were skating. And although hockey was popular, I don't think it was nearly as popular as it is today.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Pat. I can think of the backyard rink my parents had. They went out and they bought a liner, and my dad sprayed water into the liner when it got to be right around Christmas and things began to freeze. And my sister, my brother, and I, and my friends would go ice skating on that, and we'd play hockey. It was almost like playing half-court basketball. So we had sawhorses for goals, so it was kind of fun. And when they turned the lights on in the kitchen and in my bedroom so they could shine out in the light over the garage, we could play night games until it got to be about 10 degrees.
That was. I mean, I remember once as a kid I tried to flood my backyard without a liner. Did not work.
Doesn't work.
But, well, the ground was so frozen it worked for a while, but then it was too bumpy. You know, yeah. On the ponds out in the Midwest, they used to come in and flood them.
Yeah.
In other words, the
fire companies would bring out the pumper and fill them.
And they'd put a thin layer over it so it was not as bumpy because the natural ponds were, you know.
Natural ice is rough. You know, it cracks, it bubbles, all kinds of things happen.
You know, when I think about it, we'd had no warming house. We would, and then we'd walk a couple miles to go home.
Yep.
Freezing. And, but it was, there were some really good skaters. I had one friend who was good enough that he went to Milwaukee and played hockey there. But he was probably, you know, one of the the only one I knew out of these small towns that, you know, did. And, of course, you know, nobody thought of parents driving them to games. I mean, that was, you know, he was the only one I knew. And I can't remember, I think his dad used to drive him into Milwaukee, which, you know, was you know, hour and a half trip just so he could play hockey.
Well, that's unusual around here. If you went to a private school like Pingree or the one over in Pennington or Hightstown, that might be Pingree, there were a couple of hockey rinks. There was a Baker rink at Princeton University, and then there was another rink at Route 1 where sometimes I'd go with my mom and sister and brother to go skating. And they used to have skating parties for about 10 families would get together, and we'd all go skating around in circles, which, you know, was okay, but it was a whole lot more fun with a stick and a puck, but they didn't allow that. So if you wanted to be a figure skater, it was a great thing to do. My mom was friends with this woman who was from one of the Scandinavian countries, who was a very good skater, and so were her two daughters, who unfortunately for me were a little older than I and not terribly interested in a skinny little guy with glasses. So you had the problem of there wasn't a lot of good ice. And we used to play on the large pond. We used to play on the high school pond here. We used to play in backyards.
Well, did they out here, did they flood the ponds?
Yeah. The fire company always made sure that Mr. Large's pond had plenty of water in it, although, you know, it basically didn't have problems. And the high school pond, I once had the experience of skating along and hearing crack, 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 and splash, I fell in.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And the ice was about...
You were lucky that you made it out.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's only 4 feet deep, but, you know, it's incredibly cold. To get that kind of a bath. And when I fell, my stick was parallel to the ice, so I was able to kind of wedge myself up. And one of the local policemen was there skating around with his kids, and they got a ladder and shoved it along the ice and pulled me out. And then we went into the sort of like a warming field house where there was a fire, and I had to take off all my clothes and dry and put on a blanket. And, you know, when you're 10 years old, that's a very humiliating experience, especially when there's a lot of high school girls running around the room
looking at you and laughing. It is interesting because, now, I grew up in, you know, a small rural area in Wisconsin, so, of course, other than school teams. I mean, there weren't all of the teams that there are today. But anyway, why don't we start talking a little bit about my favorite sport, football?
You've got a draft coming up. I don't have an opinion. I've been focusing on hockey.
Yeah, I
did watch. I did watch a little bit of the combine.
I did too. Some of these guys were just amazing. I mean. Yeah.
I was watching the wide receivers that they were working out last Friday. My wife and I stopped on our way back from the airport at a really nice bar restaurant. Something about wine and burgers over by the Somerville Circle. And it's a beautiful bar. They've got TVs all over the place.
Where is this? What is it?
It's just past the Somerville Circle.
What's the name of it?
I can't think of the name. It's like, but it was like wine and burgers, or burgers and grapes, or something like that. But real nice bar. I'll check it out while we do some commercials. I'll figure out the name.
We better do that. In fact, why don't we? You know, since we can't be more boring than we have been.
Plenty to talk about.
Let's do a couple commercials and you can talk, and hopefully John will be here.
John Manfreda sighting, huh?
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
Okay, we're back, and it's the Three Sports Guys. Welcome, John.
Good afternoon, John.
Bill, Pat, nice to be here.
Well, yes, we were getting kind of boring, so we're glad you're here.
Well, you know, I'd like to think I'm an upgrade to the show, but as Bill would say, you know, welcome aboard. So, but good afternoon, everybody, and what are you guys talking about so far?
Well, we were talking about being kids and skating, but since we got done with that.
Bill, being a Philadelphia Flyers fan, has a lot to brag about right now. Bill, what do you explain, or how do you explain this resurgence by the Flyers?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, they have great goaltending in Hart. They've gotten very decent goaltending out of Brian Elliott. They have changed their power play. They finally decided that they would play Claude Giroux down low, and they would use Provorov on the first power play unit. They also sent Shane Gottesbacher to Lehigh for conditioning because he's still recovering from some surgery over the postseason and hasn't been himself for 3 years. So,
so you think they're just coming together at this time because, A, they're good, and, B, they're healthy?
I think they're good. I think they're well coached. I think they made the adjustments to the roster they had to make at the trade deadline. I think adding Niskanen as a free agent from Washington was great. He's a great defenseman. I think he's an upgrade over Radko Gudas, who is now playing for Washington, who was always one of my favorite Flyers because he was tough and smart and he knew how to handle the puck and he played the body very well. But Niskanen is a major upgrade, in my opinion, and he is also very good on the power play and the penalty kill.
Well, let's face it, Bill. Special teams in the NHL was 50% of the game.
You know,
I really think it's that high.
I think
you
so.
Can't win without a good power play and without good penalty killing. You just can't. You can't win. I don't care how good your team is, but you're going to give up somewhere between 6 and 8 penalties a game. You know, you've got to be able to, or what I mean is, you're going to maybe have 3 or 4 shorthanded and 3 or 4 man advantage. You've got to be able to shut down the other team's power play, maybe give up 1 power play goal, and you're going to hope to get at least 1 or 2 a game. Well, and then you play them even after that.
Well, case in point, look at the Flyers' 5-2 win over Washington. You had 3 power play goals. And whereas Washington only managed to get 1.
Well, there you go.
And what's interesting is during the first period, Washington took 4 penalties and only gave up 1 goal.
Which is not bad in the NHL. 25%, that's pretty good.
Right. And for the Flyers to have been the beneficiaries of 4 Washington penalties,
Well, the other thing that does, Bill,
when
you've got 4 penalties, it means, you know, 60% of the period, or I guess 40% of the period, you're playing shorthanded, which puts pressure, and that's going to wear you down as the game goes.
Exactly. And remember, the deal in the NHL, if you are on a power play, is you're never skating for more than 90 seconds before there's a line change or a unit change. But if you're on the penalty kill,
much harder to change.
There, you might be out there for 120 seconds.
Sure.
Which
to full 2 minutes.
Really ready to do a lot.
No, that's why you see a lot of power play goals given up in the last 30 seconds of a power play. I think to Bill's point, you know, if you can keep the puck in the offensive zone and just keep the defenseman, you know, keep circling the puck and moving, eventually you're going to get a scoring chance, and they may be just a little bit too tired to get to the open man and stop the puck.
I always think that when on a power play, if you do it right, you're attacking the net, you're driving to the net, and if you keep playing a physical game in front of the net, the defense is just going to run out of gas at some point.
Eventually, yeah. But that's that you feel is a strong reason why the Flyers have had a good second half?
I think the reason is really the goaltending. It's Hart. It's the upgrade in the defense. I think Alain Vigneault is a great coach. I don't remember whether he's won cups before. It was a mistake in New York to let him go, but the Rangers have
wasn't
been
he in Vancouver?
He was in Vancouver.
So I don't think he's won a cup, but I agree with you. He's a very good coach. Fundamentals, solid, has the respect of his players.
He's certainly got the locker room behind him, which is a good thing. And in Philadelphia, you know, people run hot and cold. And now people are complaining on WIP that they're not talking about the Flyers enough. They're the one winning team in Philadelphia now that the Eagles season is over. We're hoping for a good year with the Phillies, but that remains to be seen.
I think as a good segue into baseball here, you may remember, Bill, my compliments to you that the Phillies hired Girardi. I think it was a great hire for them. And he will – I think Girardi's the kind of guy, he's worth 10 wins a year. I really do. There's very few managers, I think, that can you can say that. I think Girardi's a good 8 to 10 extra wins because of good decisions, fundamentals, and he pushes his players and gets the most out of them.
Well, that's true. And he's also a statistics kind of guy.
Yes, he is. He's statistical driven. Yeah.
Yeah, he's learned how to use that. Now, it's interesting because in the New York Post this morning.
Or analytics, as they say.
Analytics. Goose Gossage was complaining about that. He said they've taken all the fun out of baseball and they've turned it into a game for a bunch of bean counters, in effect.
And there's a bit of truth to that.
There may be something to that. You know, the other thing that was interesting is you have to wonder, because last year were the most home runs hit in baseball. 6,775 home runs were hit in Major League Baseball. That's 2,000 home runs more than in 2 years before.
In an era that is supposed to be far less juiced up.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the Rawlings baseball is what's used in the big leagues. And they make those someplace in Central America. I forget exactly where.
And where do they get the mud that they put on the ball?
To take the sheen off? Penn's Landing, New Jersey.
New Jersey, folks.
Pack it in 5 gallon
drums.
Isn't
it only appropriate, Bill, that when they look for mud, they come to New Jersey to get it?
Well, I'm very proud of the fact that New Jersey's biggest contribution to baseball is mud.
Is the mud.
Yeah.
The mud of the Delaware. Or didn't some of the grass that goes to
the sod fields are in South Jersey, yeah. Pat is right there, Bill. They supply a number of fields, football and baseball and soccer.
Oh, yeah.
Around the country. That's
yeah,
right.
I've heard that. You know, it's interesting, you know,
they talk marketing about Kentucky bluegrass, but I think the Jersey sod wears well. It's durable.
You know, it's interesting. You go into some of these garden supply stores, and you'll see where you can buy a bag of grass seed for the grass they used, I'll say, at Fenway or at Yankee Stadium or at Chicago Field or Comiskey Park.
Was that right?
It's an interesting.
As you know, Bill, I don't frequent those kinds of stores much.
Well,
I don't exactly have a green thumb,
well,
or not very good with a set of tools.
But you know, the problem with that is. It would depend on the climate.
Right.
You don't want to go into a store and buy grass seed that they use down in Florida.
Nope, certainly
that's
not.
That's a good point, Pat.
Certainly not. But
folks, look at the incredible information you get on this show.
I know, but remember.
And a lot of stuff you don't want to know about, but that's an interesting point, Pat.
That's almost in the category of too much
information.
Now, of course,
Bill, we have to ask Pat, what's the source for the frozen tundra
of
Lambeau Field. Do you happen to know where do they get the grass for Lambeau?
I think they get it from New Jersey.
That sounds almost weird.
That would make sense because you could imagine Vince Lombardi, a New Jersey guy, saying, I want Jersey grass here because we're going to bury the opposition in Jersey sod.
And that's why they named a rest stop on the turnpike after
there
him.
You go.
Well, but the really ironic thing, it was Lombardi who started that, system underneath the grass to keep it so that it wouldn't.
They have hot water running through
hot water pipes,
hot water.
Right?
Well, now the grass is also has some plastic in it.
Yeah.
But what it does, what you see at most of the fields now with that artificial turf, you actually see the black stuff coming up.
You do.
And,
you're right. You see it come up. That's right.
And, you know, they have
and that is part of the sod itself, the composite that is built into the sod.
Well, no, but I'm talking about the artificial turf.
Yeah, that's well, but
they
what
have
you
took sod.
No,
they
but
have
the
turf.
Field you just mentioned where it's part grass, part sod. That that's where I've seen it.
Because
it comes up, it gives new meaning to the term cloud of dust, Bill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's also very, it's apparently very dangerous, and they're finding that people, especially goalies in soccer, are coming down with, all kinds of
seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, my
really?
Gosh.
I didn't know that.
Oh, my God.
Yes, they absolutely are. But the interesting thing about Lombardi, and he was the one who insisted on putting this great field in, and then you may remember back in the ice bowl, everything, it froze. And, you know, it was just, then it was just...
Yeah, the underground system froze.
Well, everything froze. Other than Bart Starr when he...
quarterback sneak behind right guard Jerry Kramer.
And he apparently went to Lombardi and said, you know, we're all freezing out there, and did not want to do the play that Lombardi wanted to send out. And so Lombardi just said, go out and get out of here. We need to get out of here.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So Starr really called the sneak.
Starr called the sneak. If you ever look at the...
There's a book written on... What is Kramer's book? It has the word block in it. What is that famous book?
Jerry Kramer. I've read it.
I believe the word block is in the title of the book by Jerry Kramer. And it describes the ice bowl and that play.
Kramer was an interesting... I mean, all of them.
Very bright guy. And that team had a lot of bright men on it.
He did. But they were also crazy. I mean, they had... and you know me and the Packers, but that was quite an era back then where a lot of these guys had been sent to the Packers because everybody threatened. You know, you don't shape up, you're going to Green Bay.
And that was a death sentence because they were going to get worked to death by Lombardi.
Well, but before Lombardi. Once Lombardi...
Well, then it was send you to oblivion in Green Bay.
It was. Before
then it became send you to a work camp in Green Bay. Yeah. Then it became a death camp.
Nobody wanted to go to Green Bay. And remember, it wasn't the days where these guys had their own... private.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Plane. And showed up with... Can you imagine one of these dudes showing up in a fur coat with jewelry on, what Vince Lombardi would have done to that guy? Would have ran after him down
Broadway
the field
Joe.
And sacked him in the field.
But I think most of the guys, when they got there, they really liked it. I mean, everybody knew the Packers. But they were able to live...
In the community,
and
yeah, you've said that. Now, Pat, you've mentioned that a couple of times. Did you ever, by chance, as a child, and I know you went to games with your father, did you ever see anybody in the community, a Packer?
Well,
This,
we also went to the bars.
Oh, okay. A dad after my heart.
I thought I was the only
dad that took my daughters to bars.
I did not go to the bars with my, well...
Okay. Okay. I got to ask Dave about this.
No, he...
We won't ask Dave about this, Bill.
Back in the day, they didn't really card us, and it was tradition that the guys came out to the bars after the games.
That's amazing.
So Lombardi had his parties at his house, but we didn't get invited to those. But, yeah, I saw,
You actually saw people in the community, right?
Well, I saw guys that came out to the bars afterwards. But it wasn't unusual. Now, I didn't live in Green Bay, but it wasn't unusual to see them all over and in the stores, et cetera. And, yeah, I've been in restaurants when they, you know, sat at the next table, et cetera. You know, you don't bug them. You don't.
Yeah.
You may, you know, say hi, but, you know, you don't do that. But anyway... Bill was starting to talk a little bit about the combine. I just have to say one thing. Guess what sport I watched over the weekend?
I'm going to take a wild stab. Women's basketball.
Nope.
College hoop.
Over
this past weekend.
The past weekend.
Well, you had the XFL on.
I did watch a little bit of this.
I got half right, folks.
Yeah.
Let's see, another sport.
I could not.
Do they play it in the cold of Wisconsin? Would this be something?
That's not really. You usually see it.
Okay.
I wasn't competitive downhill ski racing.
Nope.
You watched baseball.
Nope.
Boy, folks, she's really got us stumped here.
We give up, Pat. We quit.
Bull riding.
Bull riding.
And bull riding. We were able to...
The very thought just makes me hurt.
My grandson was here and thought that was a little strange, but it's actually...
Now, were these real bulls or mechanical bulls?
Oh, no. These are really real bulls, and this is a whole circuit. I mean...
Oh, yeah, there's professional bull riding.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I did find something interesting. You would never guess which country some of the best bull riders are from.
I'm guessing Mexico.
Well, you're close. It's Brazil.
That doesn't surprise me. Lots of cattle, the open pampas, although that might be Argentina. But, yeah, there's a big cattle industry down there.
You know, we
well, that's a sport that requires tough men. So, obviously, Italy would not be where you would find a lot of bull riding folks. I can personally attest to that.
But, you know, your idea of because of the... bullfighting in Mexico.
Oh, bullfighting.
But these bulls are, they're special, trained. I mean, they are ferocious.
They're muscular, they're very muscular
and
animals.
And they get a rating, just like the riders get a rating. And of course, riders.
Oh, really? Are professional bull riders.
Oh, they're professional bull riders.
And they're professional bulls. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're professionals.
Oh, they are, and they're rated. And there was one bull that I think, I don't know if anybody has been able to ride. But if they can stay on for 8 seconds, you know.
And this is where
there's an old joke about that, which I won't mention on this show.
You only hang on with one hand.
Well, in fact, one of the guys inadvertently touched the bull with the other hand, and that disqualifies you. Absolutely, you can only you have your, I don't know what they call it, but you have what you're holding on.
Onto that rope.
Yes. But then the other hand,
has to be up in the air.
At least it can't touch the bull. And the interesting thing is, they went back and did a replay to make sure that he had actually touched the bull. So it was kind of like an NFL going back to see if, somebody...
if there was pass interference or not.
Actually, it's not the pass interference so much as whether or not they made that first down.
Right, the ball broke the plane for a first down. That's really interesting. You know, I've seen bull riding only twice. Once was in Calgary during the Stampede.
Oh, well, that would have been a good...
Which is a real event. And another time was in Wyoming.
The colleges out west, a lot of them have teams of rodeos. They do the rodeo circuit, but these guys do the rodeo circuit, and, huge fans.
Well, I didn't know that about colleges having rodeo teams, but it doesn't surprise me, particularly if you have large ag schools where you've got the animals around anyway.
Well, I recall New Mexico State in Las Cruces, years ago when we were down there, they had a team, and they compete. Now, the bulls that they're riding are not, some of these professionals. But in any event, guys, so you may know a lot about hockey, and...
But you know a lot of bull.
Well, I know a lot of bull.
Okay. Well, it's interesting that you bring up a sport like that, because it's certainly not a junk sport. It's the kind of thing where there are professionals, and it's interesting that in South America, from what you're saying, seems to be a real hotbed of fanaticism about the sport.
Well, at least a lot of them are coming here from Brazil, which was surprising to me. But the purses now, I think one guy so far has made about $4 million this year. I mean, but it can be a total bust.
I think
they go up in rankings. They're also ranked.
The thing that amazes me is, these guys are hitting the ground after 8 seconds, and they've got an angry animal.
Well, they're lucky if it's 8 seconds.
Yeah.
And, there are a lot of injuries.
I would think there's a lot of broken ribs and broken arms and legs, and these guys probably take a real beating. I can imagine a very short career as a professional bull rider.
Well, and then, it's really interesting because, sometimes these bulls go after them.
No kidding.
So they not only get thrown off, but they have to run pretty quickly. And there are always a couple guys out there
trying to distract
clowns,
the bull. Yeah, they used to be like rodeo clowns to distract the bull.
They were rodeo clowns. The last time, they really weren't look like clowns, but there were a couple guys out there that, would distract the bull as soon as the rider was thrown.
I have to ask, doesn't the ASPCA or any of these animal cruelty organizations complain about this? They must be very bitter about this.
Didn't ever think about it. If you saw these bulls, they're
huge. I don't they're
know
bulked
if that's
up.
Mistreatment. I mean, they're really well cared for. They're obviously well fed. I don't know. I guess maybe I hadn't even thought about that as mistreatment, because what they do is they have a rider on them, and they have to perform at most for 8 seconds, and then that's it until the next time. And I've never seen one bull ridden more than once in a everybody gets their own bull, and they pull the bull and pull the bull that they're going to run.
Well, growing up out here, farm animals were a fact of life, and my parents had a neighbor a couple doors down that had a prize bull, and every Sunday the bull would be rewarded with a bucket of beer. And it's sort of like getting a car drunk. It's funny to watch them.
So,
after
Bill,
I don't know, folks. We're hearing some tall tales from Bill today.
So what are you thinking about? Did you watch any part of the combine?
No, I didn't see, other than some SportsCenter highlights. Every year at this time, these stories come out about these freakish kind of players who are, larger than mountains and run like deer. And there's this one player, I think he's 6'7", and he ran a 5'2", and they're saying it's like almost physically impossible.
Well, I watched some of those runners, and it was amazing. And the muscles, I mean, some of these guys, I don't know how anybody could even get that muscular. And you're right, they were so quick. And I can't remember the times, but I just remember that they were saying they couldn't believe a couple of these guys could really run that fast. And in many ways, football has changed so much because they are so in shape. I mean, look at the old days in baseball. I mean,
those guys used to show up in February, like way out of shape, and they had 6 weeks to play. Now they show up, it's like mid-season.
Right.
Because they train 12 months a year.
And that gets to that's the point I made before. Is the ball juice? No, I think the players are better. They're training.
Well, I don't think it's any question.
Better. I think what they are is they start earlier. Who was telling me that they were out in California and they saw all these kids, running around a track, and these were 8 and 10 year olds. So they were, and of course for a lot of kids it's a way to get out of poverty. And those are the heroes.
Oh, sure. Go someplace like the Dominican Republic, and it's a hotbed of baseball.
Oh, yes. Well, that has always been the case.
And strangely enough, it's the same thing in places like Aruba and in the Caymans. There's little baseball diamonds all over the place. Last time I was in Aruba, and I'm going back April 1, there were baseball fields all over the place. Now, when I was there the last time, it was like mid-May. It wasn't baseball season. But it was a situation where they have pros coming in during the winter from the major leagues to teach these kids. And remember, the thing about being that far south, you're 50 miles off the Venezuelan coast, I guess, 50 miles off, 15 miles, is Venezuela, which is going through some terrible times right now, has also produced a lot of ball players. So there's a lot of baseball in the Caribbean. It's
fun. Well, of course, the Dominican Republic, that happened because of the Americans down there. And when the Americans occupied, they brought baseball to the Dominican Republic. Hey, guys, I think I'm surprised we haven't... been taken over.
It's only 5:58. We've got two more minutes, folks, so I think we should keep entertaining all of our fans out there.
What do you have to say as a wrap-up?
As a wrap-up, I have to say this is a tough time of year because if your hockey team isn't doing well, which mine is not, the Devils, you know, baseball hasn't started. All you hear about is injuries. I mean, I'm at the point now where I'm afraid to go to the Red Sox site because it's the latest report on who's on the IL and who's blown out their shoulder or knee, or, you know, the injuries are frightening. So, and if you're a Yankee fan, I mean, look at what's going on there.
Look at Aaron Judge. He's now going to...
Well, who was it who 3 years ago predicted that Judge would... Great player, great guy, would not have a stellar long-term career. He's just too big of a guy to be a star in a game like baseball. There's too many ways to get hurt for somebody that big. And I feel bad for the kid, but I think he will be remembered as a kid with a lot of talent who is just injury-prone, in large part due to his size.
Well, I hope he comes back. I think the Yankees are better with Judge in right field and Stanton in left or center.
Perhaps with Clint Frazier. Excuse me, I didn't mean to cut you off, but is he bigger than somebody like Joe Adcock?
He's huge.
Yeah, I mean, I believe he's six seven. I mean, that's just huge
he's
for
a
baseball
very large
player.
Man.
Well, as I remember, maybe I'm wrong, but maybe it was because I was a little kid, but I always thought...
Well, no, plus in those days, Adcock was like 6'3", I think, and that was a giant in his day.
Oh, well, you have a better memory. I just remember he was just...
Big guy.
Like a giant.
Yep.
So why is somebody taller more prone to injury?
Well, I mean, if you think about the game of baseball and batting, he's going to get hit more. Bigger target, and he's got to swing that bat around. He has a longer distance to travel to get the bat around. And on the defensive side of it, he's got to run. It's harder for a big man to run fast to get to a ball, stop, pivot, throw. All of that creates a significant amount of excess torque on the body. Mm-hmm. And I think that has something to do with it. But a lot of his injuries have been because he's been hit.
Oh, okay.
But this recent injury is because he dove for a ball and slid on his chest, and apparently it tore something last season, and he never quite really recovered from that during the off season. And my guess was that he was probably lifting weights or something, and it didn't heal the way it should have. But it's tough to know what's really going on. I mean, professional athletes can see their career over in a heartbeat. So, you know, you always wonder what happens when these guys get hurt badly and they push to come back because there's a lot of money involved.
Right.
You know, meanwhile, Pat, you know, the NFL draft is coming up, and who do you see Green Bay having to replace?
Oh, I think they have, you know, a few people. However, the problem is with unless they can trade up, you know, there will still be some good people left. But, you know, I think their biggest problem is going to be trying to figure out who's still there that they want to pick when they finally get their chance. And I think that's...
Where do they pick?
They picked on...
25th?
I don't know if it's 25th. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, that's high 20s. It's not in the teens or single digits.
No. It's they're about to pick, other than the Super Bowl teams. And remember, they're only...
Yeah, they went to the NFC Championship.
Right. And so, you know...
You'd be in the top four.
They're either three or four.
27. Well, no, actually, they measure it by regular season record, I think, except for the two Super Bowl opponents, I thought.
Okay.
That's an interesting question that we will find the answer to and report to our fans next week.
When is the draft?
April 25.
We've gone to rewind. I think we've been kicked off.
I haven't heard it.
I just saw the screen.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Get up off that couch.